That meant many who came to her were beyond help. She had to settle them in space she couldn't afford and watch them heave bloody gasps as they died. "This is foolish," she said, standing up. Her hands were wet with blood again and she hadn't a clean rag left. "Light. We need to send more help. You." She pointed to an Aiel who had been blinded. He sat with his back to the wall, a bandage around his eyes. "You, the blind Aiel."
"I am called Ronja."
"Well, Ronja, I have some Gaishine here helping me. By my count, there should be a lot more of them. Where are they?"
"They wait until the battle is through, so that they may minister to the victors."
"We're going to fetch them," she said. "We need every person we can get to help fight."
"They may come to you here, Berylaine Pendrag, and help with tending the sick," the man said. "But they will not fight. It is not their place."
"They will see reason," she said firmly. "It's the last battle."
"You may be clan chief here," the Aiel said, smiling. "But you are not Karakarn. Even he could not command the Gaishine to disobey Jito."
"Then who could?" That seemed to surprise the man.
"No one. It is not possible."
"And the wise ones?"
"They would not," he said. "Never."
"We shall see," Berylaine said. The man smiled deeper.
"I should think that no man or woman would wish to suffer your wrath, Berylaine Pendrag. But if I had my eyes restored, I would put them out again before I watched Gaishine fight."
"They don't need to fight then," Berylaine said. "Perhaps they can help carry the wounded. Rosil, you have this group?" The tired woman nodded. There wasn't an Aes Sedai in the palace who didn't look like she'd sooner fall over than take another step. Berylaine kept her feet by using some herbs she did not think Rosil would approve. Well, she could do no more here. She might as well check on the wounded in the storage rooms. They had...
"My lady first?"
a voice asked. It was Kitan, one of the palace maids who had remained behind to help with the wounded. The slight woman took her arm.
"There is something you need to see."
Berylaine sighed, but nodded. What disaster awaited her now? Another bubble of evil, locking away groups of wounded behind walls that hadn't been there before? Had they run out of bandages again? She doubted there was a sheet, drapery, or piece of small clothes in the city that hadn't already been made into a bandage. The girl led her up the steps to Berylaine's own quarters, where a few of the casualties were being nursed. She stepped into one of the rooms and was surprised to find a familiar face waiting for her. Anora sat at a bedside, wearing red slashed with gray, her customary braids pulled back and tied in an unflattering way. Berylaine almost didn't recognize her. Anora rose at Berylaine's entrance, bowing, though she looked about ready to fall over with fatigue. In the bed lay Galad Damodred. Berylaine gasped, rushing to his side. It was him, though he bore a vicious wound to his face. He still breathed, but he was unconscious. Berylaine lifted his arm to take his hand in hers, but found that the arm ended in a stump. One of the surgeons had already cauterized it to keep him from bleeding to death.
"How?"
Berylaine asked, clutching his other hand, closing her eyes. His hand felt warm. When she had heard what Damodred bellowed, defeating the man in white.
"I felt that I owed it to you," Anora said. "I located him on the battlefield after Damodred announced what he had done. I pulled him away while Damodred fought against one of the Black Tower's men."
She sat back down on the stool beside the bed, then leaned forward, drooping.
"I could not heal him, Berylaine. It was all I could do to make the gateway to bring him here. I'm sorry."
"It is all right," Berylaine said. "Kitan, fetch one of the other sisters. Anora, you will feel better once you have rested.
Thank you. Anora nodded. She closed her eyes, and Berylane was shocked to see tears at the edges of her eyes.
What is it?
Berylane asked.
Anora, what is wrong?
It should not concern you, Berylane, she said, rising. All are taught it, you see. Do not channel, if you are too tired. There can be complications. I needed a gateway back to the palace, though, to bring him to safety, to restore.
Anora collapsed from her stool. Berylane dropped to her side, propping up her head. Only then did she realize that it wasn't the braids that had made Anora look so different. The face was wrong, too. Changed. No longer ageless, but instead youthful.
Oh, light, Anora, Berylane said. You've burned yourself out, haven't you?
The woman had lapsed into unconsciousness. Berylane's heart lurched. The woman and she had had differences recently, but Anora had been her confidant and friend for years before that. The poor woman. The way Aes Sedai spoke, this was considered to be worse than death. Berylane lifted the woman onto the room's couch, and then covered her with a blanket. Berylane felt so powerless. Maybe she can be healed somehow. She went back to Galad's side to hold his hand for a time longer, righting the stool and sitting upon it. Just a little rest. She closed her eyes. He lived. It came at a terrible cost. But he lived. She was shocked when he spoke.
How?
She opened her eyes to find him looking at her.
How am I here? He asked softly.
Anora, she said. She found you on the battlefield.
My wounds?
Other healers will come when they can be spared, she said. Your hand...
She steeled herself.
Your hand is lost, but we can wash away that cut to your face.
No, he whispered. It is only a little cut. Save the healing for those who would die without it.
He seemed so tired, barely awake.
She bit her lip, but nodded.
Of course.
She hesitated. The battle fares poorly, doesn't it?
Yes.
So now, we simply hope?
He slipped his hand from hers and reached under his shirt. When an Aes Sedai arrived, they would have to undress him and care for his wounds. Only the stump had been tended to so far, as it was the worst. Galad sighed, then trembled, his hand slipping away from his shirt. Had he been intending to remove it?
Hope, he whispered, then fell unconscious.
Rand wept. He huddled in the darkness, the pattern spinning before him, woven from the threads of the lives of men. So many of those threads ended. So many. He should have been able to protect them. Why couldn't he? Against his will, the names began to replay in his mind. The names of those who had died for him, starting with only women, but now expanded to each and every person he should have been able to save, but hadn't. As humankind fought at Mirallor and Shael Ghul, Rand was forced to watch the deaths. He could not turn away. The Dark One chose then to attack him in force. The pressure came again, striving to crush Rand into nothing. He couldn't move. Every bit of his essence, his determination and his strength, focused on keeping the Dark One from ripping him apart. He could only watch as they died. Rand watched Devrim Bashir die in a charge, followed quickly by his wife. Rand cried out at the fall of his friend. He wept for Devrim Bashir. Dear faithful Hurin fell to a Trolloc attack as it struck for the top of the heights where Matt made his stand. Rand wept for Hurin, the man with so much faith in him, the man who would have followed him anywhere. Jory Conger lay buried beneath a Trolloc body, whimpering for help until he bled to death. Rand wept for Jory as his thread finally vanished. And Nyla, who had decided to forsake Farderai's Mai and had laid a bridal wreath at the foot of the Siswayam on Lyran, speared through the gut by four Trollocs. Rand wept for her. Carlden Manfor, who had followed him for so long and had been at Dumai's Wells, died when his strength for channeling gave out, and he dropped to the ground in exhaustion. Sharans fell upon him and stabbed him with their black daggers. His Aes Sedai, Beldine, stumbled and fell moments later. Rand wept for them both. He wept for Garth Bryn and Swan. He wept for Gawain. So many. So very many.
You are losing.
Rand huddled down further. What could he do? His dream of stopping the Dark One? He would create a nightmare if he did that. His own intentions betrayed him.
Give in, adversary. Why keep fighting? Stop fighting and rest.
He was tempted. Oh, how he was tempted. Light. What would Nynaeve think? He could see her, fighting to save Alana. How ashamed would she and Moiraine be if they knew that in that moment, Rand just wanted to let go? Pain washed across him, and he screamed again.
Please, let it end! It can.
Rand huddled down, writhing, trembling. But still their screams assaulted him. Death upon death. He held on, barely. No, he whispered.
Very well, the Dark One said. I have one more thing to show you. One more promise of what can be.
The Dark One spun threads of possibility one last time. All became darkness. Taim lashed out with the one power, thrashing Mishrael with waves of air.
Go back then, you fool! Fight! We will not lose that position!
The Dreadlord ducked back, gathering his two companions and slinking away to do as ordered. Taim smoldered, then shattered a nearby stone with a surge of power. That Aes Sedai ridge cat, how dare she best him!
Mahail, a calm voice said.
Taim, Mahail. He had to think of himself as Mahail. He crossed the hillside toward the voice that had called to him. He had taken a gateway to safety, panicked, across the heights, and he was now at the edge of the southeastern slope of the heights. Diamandred used this location to monitor the battle below and to send destruction down into the formations of Andorans, Kyrianen, and Aiel. Diamandred's Trollocs controlled the entire corridor between the heights and bogs, and were wearing down the defenders at the Dry River. It was only a matter of time. Meanwhile, the Sharan army fought northeast of here on the heights. It concerned him that Cauthen had arrived so quickly to stop the advance of the Sharans. No matter. That was a move of desperation for the man. He wouldn't be able to stand up against the Sharan army. But the most important thing right now was destroying those Aes Sedai on the other side of the heights. That was key to winning this battle. Mihail passed between suspicious Sharans with their strange dress and tattoos. Diamandred sat, cross-legged, at their center. His eyes closed, he breathed in and out slowly. That song, Greal, he used. It took something out of him, something more than just the normal strength required for channeling. Would that provide Mihail with an opening? How it galled to continue to put himself beneath another. Yes, he had learned much from this man, but now Diamandred was obviously unfit to lead. He coddled these Sharans, and he wasted energy on his vendetta with Althor. The weakness of another was Mihail's potential opening.
I hear that you are failing, Mihail, Diamandred said.
Before them, across the dry riverbed, the Andoran defenses were finally starting to buckle. Trollocs were always testing to find weak points in their lines, and they were breaking through pike formations in various areas, all up and down the river. The Legion's heavy cavalry and the Kyrianen light were in constant motion now, making sweeps of desperation against Trollocs as they broke through the Andoran defenses. The Aiel were still holding them back down near the bogs, and the Legion's crossbowmen combined with Andoran pike were still keeping the Trollocs from sweeping around their right flank. But the pressure of the Trolloc onslaught was relentless, and Elaine's lines were gradually bowing out, moving deeper into Shinaran territory.
"Merhael," Demandred said, opening his eyes. Ancient eyes.
Mihail refused to feel intimidated, looking into them. He would not be intimidated.
"Tell me how you failed."
"The Aes Sedai witch," Mihail spat. "She has a Saangreal of great power. I almost had her, but the true power failed me."
"You are given only a trickle for a reason," Demandred said, closing his eyes again. "It is unpredictable for one unaccustomed to its ways."
Mihail said nothing. He would practice with the true power. He would learn its secrets. The other Forsaken were old and slow. New blood would soon rule. With a relaxed sense of inevitability, Demandred stood. He gave off the impression of a massive boulder shifting its position.
"You will return and kill her, Mihail. I have slain her warder. She should be easy meat."
"The Saangreal!"
Demandred held out his scepter, with the golden goblet affixed atop it. Was this a test? Such power! Mihail had felt the strength radiating from Demandred as he used it.
"You say she has a Saangreal," Demandred said. "With this, you will have one as well. I grant you Sakarnan to take from you any excuse for failure. Succeed or die in this, Mihail. Prove yourself worthy to stand among the Chosen."
Mihail licked his lips.
"And if the Dragon Reborn finally comes to you?"
Demandred laughed.
"You think I would use this to fight him? What would that prove? Our strengths must be matched if I am to show myself the better. By all accounts, he cannot use Kalendor safely, and he foolishly destroyed the Choadan Kal. He will come, and when he does, I will face him unaided and prove myself the true master of this realm."
Darkness within, Taim thought. He's gone completely mad, hasn't he? Strange to look into those eyes, which seemed so lucid, and hear complete insanity from his lips. When Demandred had first come to Mihail, offering him the chance to serve the Great Lord, the man had not been like this. Arrogant, yes. All of the Chosen were arrogant. Demandred's determination to kill Althor personally had burned like a fire within him. But this was something different. Living in Shara had changed him, weakened him, certainly. Now this. What man would willingly give such a powerful artifact to a rival? Only a fool, Mihail thought, reaching for the Saangreal. Killing you will be like putting down a horse with three broken legs, Demandred. Pity. I had hoped to vanquish you as a rival. Demandred turned away, and Mihail pulled the One Power through Sakarnan, drinking gluttonously of its bounty. The sweetness of Sayadine saturated him, a raging torrent of succulent power. He was immense while holding this. He could do anything. Level mountains, destroy armies, all on his own. Mihail itched to pull out flows, to weave them together and destroy this man.
"Take care,"
Demandred said. His voice sounded pathetic, weak, the squeaking of a mouse.
"Do not channel through that toward me. I have bonded Sakarnan to me. If you try to use it against me, it will burn you from the pattern."
Did Demandred lie? Could a Saangreal be attuned to a specific person? He did not know. He considered, then lowered Sakarnan, bitter despite the power surging through him.
"I am not a fool, Mihail," Demandred said dryly.
I will not hand you the noose in which to hang me. Go and do as you are told. You are my servant in this thing, the hand that holds my axe to chop down the tree. Destroy the Ammerlin. Use balefire. We have been commanded, and in this we will obey. The world must be unraveled before we reweave it to our vision.
Mihail snarled at the man, but did as he was told, weaving a gateway. He would destroy that Aes Sedai witch. Then he would decide how to deal with Demandred.
Elaine watched in frustration as her pike formations were pushed back. That Birgitta had managed to convince her to remove herself from the immediate area of combat, a Trolloc breakthrough could come at any moment, did not sit well with her. Elaine had retreated almost to the ruins, out of direct danger for the moment. A double ring of guards surrounded her, most of them sitting and eating, gaining what little strength they could during the moments between fights. Elaine did not fly her banner, but she sent messengers to let her commanders know that she still lived. Though she had tried to guide her troops against the Trollocs, her efforts had not been enough. Her forces were clearly weakening. "We have to go back," she said to Birgitta. "They need to see me, Birgitta." "I don't know if it will change anything," Birgitta said. "Those formations just can't hold in the face of both Trollocs and that bloody channeling. I..." "What is it?" Elaine asked. Birgitta turned away. "I swear I once remembered a situation like this." Elaine set her jaw. She found Birgitta's loss of memory heart-wrenching, but it was only one woman's problem. Thousands of her people were dying. Nearby, the refugees from Camelin still searched the area for arrows and wounded. Several groups approached Elaine's guards, speaking with them softly, asking after the battle or the queen. Elaine felt a spike of pride at the refugees and their tenacity. The city had broken, but a city could be rebuilt. The people, the true heart of Camelin, would not fall so easily. Another lance of light plunged into the battlefield, killing men, disrupting the pikemen. Beyond that, on the far side of the heights, women channeled in a furious battle. She could see the lights flashing in the night, though that was all. Should Elaine join them? Her command here had not been good enough to save the soldiers, but it had provided guidance and leadership. "I fear for our army, Elaine," Birgitta said. "I fear that the day is lost." "The day cannot be lost," Elaine said. "Because if it is, we all are lost. I refuse to accept defeat. You and I will return. Let Demandred try to strike us down. Perhaps seeing me will revitalize the soldiers, make them..." A group of Camelin refugees nearby attacked her guardsmen and guardswomen. Elaine cursed, turning Moonshadow and embracing the One Power. The group she had at first taken for refugees, in dirty, soot-stained clothing, wore mail beneath. They fought her guards, killing with sword and axe. Not refugees at all. Mercenaries. "Betrayal!" Birgitta called, lifting her bow and shooting a mercenary through the throat. "To arms!" "It's not a betrayal," Elaine said. She wove fire and struck down a group of three. "Those aren't ours. Watch for thieves in the clothing of beggars." She turned as another group of refugees lunged at the weakened lines of guards. They were all around. They had crept up while attention had been focused on the distant battlefield. As a group of mercenaries broke through, she wove Sidar to show them the folly of attacking an Aes Sedai. She released a powerful weave of air. As it hit one of the men charging her, the weave fell apart, unraveling. Elaine cursed, turning her horse to flee, but one of the attackers lunged forward and drove his sword into Moonshadow's neck. The horse reared, squealing in agony, and Elaine caught a brief glimpse of guards fighting all around as she fell to the ground, panicked for the safety of her babes. Rough hands grabbed her by the shoulders and held her against the ground. She saw something silver glisten in the night. A fox-head medallion. Another pair of hands pressed it to her skin just above her breasts. The metal was sharply cold. "Hello, my queen," Melar said, squatting beside her. The former guardsman, the one many people still assumed had fathered her children, leered down at her. "You've been very hard to track down." Elaine spat at him, but he anticipated her, raising his hand to catch the spittle. He smiled, then stood up, leaving her held by two mercenaries. Though some of her guards still fought, most had been pushed back or killed. Melar turned as two men dragged Birgitta over. She thrashed in their grip, and a third man came over to help hold her. Melar took out his sword, regarded its blade for a moment as if inspecting himself in its reflective gleam. Then he rammed it into Birgitta's stomach. Birgitta gasped, falling to her knees. Melar beheaded her with a vicious backhand blow. Elaine found herself sitting very still, unable to think or react, as Birgitta's corpse flopped forward, spilling lifeblood from the neck. The bond winked away, and with it came pain. Terrible pain.
"I've been waiting to do that for a long time," Melar said. "Blood and bloody ashes, but it felt good."
Birgitta. Her warder was dead. Her warder had been killed. That tough yet generous heart, that tremendous loyalty, destroyed. The loss made it hard to think. Melar kicked at Birgitta's corpse as a man rode up with a body draped across the back of his saddle. The man wore an Andoran uniform, and the face-down corpse dangled golden hair. Whoever the poor woman was, she wore a dress exactly like Elaine's. "Oh, no."
"Go," Melar said.
The man rode off, a few others forming around him, fake guardsmen. They carried Elaine's banner, and one started shouting, "The queen is dead! The queen has fallen!" Melar turned to Elaine.
"Your people still fight. Well, that ought to disrupt their ranks. As for you, well, apparently the great lord has a use for those children of yours. I've been ordered to bring them to Sheol Ghul. It occurs to me that you needn't be with them at the time."
He looked at one of his companions.
"Can you make it work?"
The other man knelt beside Elaine, then pressed his hands against her belly. A jolt of sudden fright pushed through her numbness and her shock. "Her babes!"
"She's far enough along," the man said. "I can probably keep the children alive with a weave if you cut them out. It will be difficult to do right. They're young yet. 6 months along. But with the weaves I was shown by the Chosen, yes, I think I can keep them living for an hour. But you will have to take them to Mahale to get them to Sheol Ghul. Traveling with a regular gateway won't work there any longer."
Melar sheathed his sword and pulled a hunting knife from his belt.
"Good enough for me. We'll send the children on as the great lord asks. But you, my queen, you are mine."
Elaine flailed, but the men's grip was tight. She clawed at Sidar again and again, but the medallion worked like fork root. She might as well have been trying to embrace Sidene as reach Sidar.
"No!"
she screamed as Melar knelt beside her.
"No!" "Good," he said. "I was hoping you'd get around to screaming."
Nothing. Rand turned. He tried to turn. He had no form or shape. Nothing. He tried to speak, but he had no mouth. Finally, he managed to think the words and make them manifest. "Shaitan," Rand projected. "What is this?"
"Our covenant," the Dark One replied. "Our accommodation."
"Our accommodation is nothing?" Rand demanded.
"Yes."
He understood. The Dark One was offering a deal. Rand could accept this. He could accept nothingness. The two of them dueled for the fate of the world. Rand pushed for peace, glory, love. The Dark One sought the opposite. Pain, suffering. This was, in a way, a balance between the two. The Dark One would agree not to reforge the wheel to suit his grim desires. There would be no enslaving of mankind, no world without love. There would be no world at all.
"It is what you promised Aelon," Rand said. "You promised him an end to existence."
"I offer it to you, too," the Dark One replied, "and to all men. You wanted peace. I give it to you, the peace of the void that you so often seek. I give you nothing and everything."
Rand did not reject the offer immediately. He grasped the offer and cradled it in his mind. No more pain, no more suffering, no more burdens. An ending. Was that not what he had desired? A way to end the cycles finally?
"No," Rand said. "An end to existence is not peace. I made this choice before. We will continue."
The Dark One's pressure began to surround him again, threatening to rip him apart.
"I will not offer again," the Dark One said.
"I would not expect you to," Rand said, as his body returned and the threads of possibility faded.
Then the true pain began.
Min waited with the gathered Shanchan forces, officers walking down the lines with lanterns to prepare the men. They had not returned to Ebudar, but instead had fled through gateways to a large open plain that she did not recognize. Trees with a strange bark and large open fronds grew here. She could not tell if they were truly trees or just very large ferns. It was particularly hard to tell because of the wilting. The trees had grown leaves, but now they drooped down at the sides, as if they had not seen water in far too many weeks. Min tried to imagine what they would have looked like when healthy. The air smelled different to her. Of plants she did not recognize, and of seawater. The Shanchan forces waited in strict formations of troops, ready to march, each fourth man with a lantern, though only 1 in 10 of those were currently lit. Moving an army could not be done fast, despite gateways, but Fortuna had access to hundreds of Damani. The retreat had been carried out efficiently, and Min suspected that a return to the battlefield could be accomplished swiftly. If Fortuna decided to return, that was. The Empress sat atop a pillar in the night, lifted up to it on her palanquin, lit by blue lanterns. It was not a throne, but a pure white pillar, about 6 feet high, erected on the top of a small hill. Min had a seat next to the pillar, and could hear reports as they arrived.
"This battle is not going well for the Prince of the Ravens," General Galgan said.
He addressed his generals before Fortuna, speaking to them directly, so that they could respond to him without formally addressing the Empress.
"His request for us to return came only just now. He has waited far too long to seek our aid." "I hesitate to say this," Yulun said, "but though the Empress's wisdom knows no bounds, I do not have confidence in the Prince. He might be the chosen consort of the Empress, and he was obviously a wise choice for that role. He has proven himself reckless in battle, however. Perhaps he is overly strained by what is happening."
"I'm sure he has a plan," Beslan said, earnest. "You have to trust Matt. He knows what he is doing."
"He impressed me earlier," Galgan said. "The omens seem to favor him."
"He's losing, Captain General," Elan said. "Losing badly. The omens for a man can change quickly, as can the fortune of a nation."
Min narrowed her eyes at the short captain of the air. He now wore the last two fingernails of each hand lacquered. He had been the one to lead the strike on Tarvalin, and the success of that attack had gained him great favor in Fortuona's eyes. Symbols and omens spun around his head, like those above Galgun's, and indeed Beslan's. Light, Min thought. Am I really starting to think of omens, like Fortuona? I need to leave these people. They're mad.
I feel that the prince views this battle too much as a game, Eulen said again. Though his initial gambles were keen ones, he has overextended himself. How many a man has stood around the table of Duktok and looked like a genius because of his bets, when really just random chance made him seem capable? The prince won at first, but now we see how dangerous it is to gamble as he has.
Eulen inclined his head toward the Empress. His assertions grew increasingly bold, as she gave him no reason to quiet himself. From the Empress, in this situation, that was an indication he should continue.
I have heard rumors about him, Galgun said.
Matt's a gambler, yes, Beslan said, but he's uncannily good at it. He wins, General.
Please, you need to go back and help.
Eulen shook his head emphatically.
The Empress, may she live forever, pulled us away from the battlefield for good reason. If the prince could not protect his own command post, he is not in control of the battle.
Bolder and bolder. Galgan rubbed his chin, then looked at another person there. Min didn't know much of Tylee. She remained quiet at these meetings. With graying hair and broad shoulders, the dark-skinned woman had an indefinable strength to her. This was a general who had led her people directly in battle many times. Those scars proved it.
These mainlanders fight better than I ever assumed they would, Tylee said. I fought alongside some of Cawthon's soldiers. I think they will surprise you, General. I, too, humbly suggest that we return to help. But is it in the best interests of the Empire to do so? Eulen asked. Cawthon's forces will weaken the Shadow, as will the Shadow's march to Ebudar from Mirilor. We can crush the Trollocs with air attacks along the way. The long victory should be our goal. Perhaps we can send Damani to fetch the prince and bring him to safety. He has fought well, but he is obviously overmatched in this battle. We cannot save his armies, of course. They are doomed.
Min frowned, leaning forward. One of the images above Yulin's head. It was so odd. A chain. Why would he have a chain above his head? He's a captive, she thought suddenly. Light. Someone is playing him like an instrument. Matt feared a spy. Min felt cold.
The Empress, may she live forever, has made her decision, Galgun said. We return, unless her mind in its wisdom has been changed.
He turned toward her, a questioning look on his face. Our spy can channel, Min realized, inspecting Eulen. That man is under compulsion. A channeler. Black Aja? Dark Friend Damani? A male dreadlord? It could be anyone. And the spy would be wearing a weave for disguise, too, in all likelihood. So, then, how would Min ever spot this spy? Viewings. Aes Sedai and other channelers always had viewings attached to them. Always. Could she find a clue in one of those? She knew by instinct that Yulin's chain meant he was a captive of another. He wasn't the true spy then, but a puppet. She started with the other nobility and generals. Of course, many of them had omens above their heads, and those types commonly did. How would she spot something out of the ordinary? Min scanned the watching crowd, and her breath caught as she noticed for the first time that one of the Sojin, a youthful woman with freckles, carried an array of images above her head. Min didn't recognize the woman. Had she been serving here the whole time? Min was certain she'd have noticed earlier if the woman had come close to her. People who were not channelers, warders, or Tavirin rarely had so many images attached to them. Oversight or happenstance, though, she hadn't thought to look specifically at the servants. Now the cover-up was obvious to her. Min looked away so as to not raise the servants' suspicions, and considered her next move. Her instincts whispered that she should just attack, take out a knife and throw it. If that servant were a dreadlord, or light, one of the Forsaken, striking first might be the only way to defeat her. There was also a chance, however, that the woman was innocent. Min debated, then stood up on her chair. Several of the blood muttered at the breach of decorum, but Min ignored them. She stepped up onto the armrest of her chair, balancing there to put herself even with Chuan. Min leaned in. "Matt has asked for us to return," Min said softly. "How long will you debate doing what he asked?" Chuan eyed her.
"Until I am convinced this is best for my empire."
"He is your husband."
"One man's life is not worth that of thousands," Chuan said,
but she sounded genuinely troubled.
"If the battle really does go as badly as Yulin's scouts say..."
"You named me Truth Speaker," Min said. "What exactly does that mean?"
"It is your duty to censor me in public if I do something wrong. However, you are untrained in the station. It would be best for you to hold yourself back until I can provide proper..."
Min turned to face the generals and the watching crowd, her heart beating frantically. "As Truth Speaker to the Empress Fortuona, I speak now the truth. She has abandoned the armies of humankind, and she withholds her strength in a time of need. Her pride will cause the destruction of all people everywhere." The blood looked stunned.
"It is not so simple, young woman," General Galgan said.
From the looks others gave him, it seemed he wasn't supposed to debate a truth speaker. He barreled forward anyway.
"This is a complex situation."
"I would be more sympathetic," Min said, "if I didn't know there was a spy for the Shadow among us." The freckled Sojin looked up sharply. "I have you," Min thought, then pointed at General Yulin. "Abaldar Yulin, I denounce you. I have seen omens that prove to me you are not acting in the interests of the Empire." The real spy relaxed, and Min caught a hint of a smile on her lips. That was good enough. As Yulin protested loudly the accusation, Min dropped a knife into her hand and whipped it toward the woman. It flipped end over end, but just before hitting the woman it stopped and hung in the air. Nearby Damani and Suldam gasped. The spy shot Min a hateful glare, then opened a gateway, throwing herself through. Weaves shot after her, but she was gone before most of the people at the meeting realized what was happening. "I'm sorry, General Yulin," Min announced, "but you are suffering from compulsion. Fortuona, it is obvious that the Shadow is doing whatever it can to keep us from this battle. With that in mind, will you still pursue this course of indecision?" Min met Tuon's eyes.
"You play these games quite well," Chuan whispered, voice cold. "And to think that I worried for your safety by bringing you into my court. I should have worried for myself, it appears."
Chuan sighed, ever so softly.
"I suppose you give me the opportunity, perhaps the mandate, to follow what my heart would choose, whether or not it is wise." She stood. "General Galgan, gather your troops. We will return to the field of Miralor."
Egwene wove earth and destroyed the boulders behind which the Sharans had hidden. The other Aes Sedai struck immediately, hurling weaves through the crackling air. The Sharans died in fire, lightning, and explosions. This side of the heights was so piled with rubble and scarred with trenches It looked like the remains of a city following a terrible earthquake. It was still night, and they had been fighting. Light. How long had it been since Gawain died? Hours upon hours. Egwene redoubled her efforts, refusing to let the thought of him pull her down. Over the hours, her Aes Sedai and the Sharans had fought back and forth across the western side of the heights. Slowly, Egwene was pushing them eastward. At times, Egwene's side had seemed to be winning, but lately, more and more Aes Sedai fell from the effects of fatigue or the One Power. Another group of channelers approached through the smoke, drawing on the One Power. Egwene could sense them more than see them. "Deflect their weaves!" Egwene yelled, standing at the forefront. "I will attack. You defend." Other women took up the call, yelling it along their battle line. No longer did they fight in pockets alone. Women of all Ajahs lined up to either side of Egwene, concentration on their ageless faces. Warders stood in front of them. Using their bodies to stop weaves was the only protection they could offer. Egwene felt Lyalwyn approaching from behind. The new warder took her duties seriously. A Seanchan, fighting as her warder in the last battle. Why not? The world itself was unraveling. The cracks all around Egwene's feet proved that. Those had not faded, as earlier ones had. The darkness remained. Balefire had been used too much in this area. Egwene launched a wave of fire like a moving wall. Corpses went up in flames as the wall passed, leaving behind smoking piles of bones. Her attack scored the ground, blackening it, and the Sharans banded together to fight back against the weave. She killed a few of them before they shattered the attack. The other Aes Sedai deflected or destroyed their return weaves, and Egwene gathered her strength to try again. "So tired," a piece of her whispered. "Egwene, you're so tired. This is becoming dangerous." Lyalwyn stepped up, stumbling on broken rock, but joining her at the front. "I bring word, mother," she said in that Seanchan drawl. "The Ashaman have recovered the seals. Their leader carries them." Egwene let out a relieved breath. She wove fire and sent it forth in pillars this time, the flames illuminating the broken ground around them. Those cracks that Mihail had caused worried her deeply. She began another weave, then stopped. Something was wrong. She spun around as balefire, a column as wide as a man's arm, ripped through the Aes Sedai line, vaporizing half a dozen women. Explosions all around appeared as if from nowhere, and other women went from battle to death in a heartbeat. The balefire burned away women who had stopped weaves from killing us. But those women had been removed from the pattern before they could weave those, and could no longer have stopped the Sharan attacks. Balefire burned a thread backward in the pattern. The chain of events was catastrophic. Sharan channelers who had been dead were now alive again, and they surged forward, men clawing across the broken ground like hounds. Women walking in linked groups of four or five. Egwene sought out the source of the balefire. She had never seen such an immense bar of it. So powerful it must have burned threads a few hours back. She found Mihail standing atop the heights, the air warped in a bubble around him. Black tendrils like moss or lichen crept out of gaps in the rock around him. A spreading sickness. Darkness. Nothing. It would consume them all. Another bar of balefire burned a hole through the ground and touched women, making their forms glow, then vanish. The air itself broke, like a bubble of force that exploded from Mihail. The storm from before returned stronger.
"I thought that I'd taught you to run," Egwene snarled, climbing to her feet and gathering her power.
At her feet, the ground cracked and opened into nothing. Light. She could feel the emptiness in that hole. She began a weave, but another strike of balefire coursed across the battlefield, killing women she loved. The trembling underfoot threw Egwene to the ground, Screams grew loud as Sharan attacks slaughtered Egwene's followers. Aes Sedai scattered, seeking safety. The cracks on the ground spread, as if the top of the heights here had been hit by a hammer. Balefire! She needed her own. It was the only way to fight him. She rose to her knees and began crafting the forbidden weave, though her heart lurched as she did it. No! Using balefire would only push the world toward destruction. Then what?
It's only a weave, Egwene.
Perrin's words, when he had seen her in the world of dreams and stopped balefire from hitting him. But it wasn't just another weave. There wasn't anything like it. So exhausted. Now that she'd stopped for a moment, she could feel her numbing fatigue. In its depths, she felt the loss, the bitter loss of Gawain's death. Mother, Lyalwyn said, pulling her shoulder. The woman had stayed with her. Mother, we must go. The Aes Sedai have broken. The Sharans overrun us. Ahead, Mihail saw her. He smiled, striding forward, a scepter in one hand, the other pointed toward her, palm up. What would happen if he burned her away with balefire? The last 2 hours would vanish. Her rally of the Aes Sedai, the dozens upon dozens of Sharans she had killed, just a weave. No other like it. That isn't the way it works, she thought. Two sides to every coin. Two halves to the power. Hot and cold. Light and dark. Woman and man. If a weave exists, so must its opposite. Mihail released balefire, and Egwene did something. The weave she'd tried before on the cracks, but of a much greater power and scope. A majestic, marvelous weave, a combination of all five powers. It slid into place before her. She yelled, releasing it as if from her very soul, a column of pure white that struck Mihail's weave at its center. The two canceled one another, like scalding water and freezing water poured together. A powerful flash of light overwhelmed all else, blinding Egwene, but she could feel something from what she did. A shoring up of the pattern. The cracks stopped spreading, and something welled up inside of them, a stabilizing force. A growth, like scab on a wound. Not a perfect fix, but at least a patch. She yelled, forcing herself to her feet. She would not face him on her knees. She drew every scrap of the power she could hold, throwing it at the Forsaken with the fury of the Ammerlin. The two streams of power sprayed light against one another, the ground around Mihail cracking as the ground near Egwene rebuilt itself. She still did not know what it was she wove. The opposite of balefire, a fire of her own, a weave of light and rebuilding. The flame of Tar-Valon. They matched one another in stasis for an eternal moment. In that moment, Egwene felt a peace come upon her. The pain of Gawain's death faded. He would be reborn. The pattern would continue. The very weave she wielded calmed her anger and replaced it with peace. She reached more deeply into Sayadar, that glowing comfort that had guided her so long. And she drew on more of the power. Her stream of energy pushed its way through Mihail's balefire like a sword thrust, spraying the power aside and traveling right up the stream into Mihail's outstretched hand. It pierced the hand and shot through his chest. The balefire vanished. Mihail gaped, stumbling, eyes wide. And then he crystallized from the inside out, as if freezing in ice. A multi-hued, beautiful crystal grew from him, uncut and rough, as if from the core of the earth itself. Somehow Egwene knew that the flame would have had much less effect on a person who had not given himself to the shadow. She clung to the power she'd held. She had pulled in too much. She knew that if she released her grip, she would leave herself burned out, unable to channel another drop. The power surged through her in this last moment. Something trembled far to the north. Rand's fight continued. The gaps in the land expanded. Mihail and Demondred's balefire had done its work. The world here was crumbling. Black lines radiated across the heights, and her mind's eye saw them opening, the land shattering, and a void appearing here that sucked into it all life. "Watch for the light," Egwene whispered. "Mother?" Lyalwyn still knelt beside her. Around them, hundreds of Sharans picked themselves up off the ground. "Watch for the light, Lyalwyn," Egwene said. "As the Amyrlin Seat, I command you. Find the seals of the Dark One's prison and break them. Do it the moment the light shines. Only then can it save us." "But..." Egwene wove a gateway and wrapped Lyalwyn in air, shoving her through to safety. As she went, Egwene released the woman's bond, severing their brief tie. "No!" Lyalwyn cried. The gateway closed. Black cracks into nothingness expanded all around Egwene as she faced the hundreds of Sharans. Her Aes Sedai had fought with strength and valor, but those Sharan channelers still remained. They surrounded her, some timid, others smiling in triumph. She closed her eyes and drew in the power. More than a woman should be able to. More than was right. Far beyond safety, far beyond wisdom. This Sangreal had no buffer to prevent this. Her body was spent. She offered it up and became a column of light, releasing the flame of Tarvalin into the ground beneath her and high into the sky. The power left her in a quiet, beautiful explosion, washing across the Sharans and sealing the cracks created by her fight with Mihail. Egwene's soul separated from her collapsing body and rested upon that wave, riding it into the light.
Egwene died. Rand screamed in denial, in rage, in sorrow.
"Not her. Not her.
The dead are mine.
Shaitan!"
Rand yelled.
"Not her.
I will kill them all, adversary."
Rand bent over, squeezing his eyes shut. "I will protect you," he thought. "Whatever else happens, I will see you safe. I swear it. I swear it." Oh, light. Egwene's name joined the list of the dead. That list continued to grow, thundering in his mind. His failures. So many failures. He should have been able to save them. The Dark One's attacks persisted, trying to rip Rand apart and crush him all at once. Oh, light. Not Egwene. Rand closed his eyes and collapsed, barely holding back the next attack. Darkness enclosed him.
Lyanna raised her arm, shading her eyes against the magnificent burst of light. It washed the hillside of its darkness, and for a moment left only brilliance. Sharans froze in place, casting shadows behind them as they crystallized. The column of power rose high in the air, a beacon, then faded. Lyanna dropped to her knees, one hand resting on the ground to steady herself. A blanket of crystals coated the ground, growing over broken rock, coating the scarred landscape. Where cracks had opened, they were now filled with crystal, looking like tiny rivers. Lyanna climbed to her feet and crept forward, passing the Sharans frozen in crystal, dead in time. At the very center of the explosion, Lyanna found a column of crystal as wide as an ancient leatherleaf tree, rising some 50 feet in the air. Frozen at its center was a fluted rod, Vora's Sangreal. There was no sign of the Amyrlin herself, but Lyanna knew.
The Ammerlin seat has fallen, a nearby Aes Sedai cried amid the crystallized Sharons. The Ammerlin seat has fallen! Thunder rumbled. Verilane looked up from the side of the bed, then stood, Galad's hand slipping from hers as she walked to the window set in the stone wall. The sea churned and broke against the rocks outside, roaring as if in anger, perhaps pain. White foam sprayed violent toward clouds where lightning cast a fractured light. While she watched, those clouds grew thicker in the night, if that was possible. Darker. Dawn was still an hour off. The clouds were so black, though, she knew she would not see the sun when it rose. She went back to Galad's side, sat down and took his hand. When would an Aes Sedai come to heal him? He was still unconscious, save for nightmare whispers. He twisted, and something sparkled at his neck. Verilane reached under his shirt, taking out a medallion. It was in the shape of a fox's head. She rubbed her finger across it.
Back to Cawthon,
Galad whispered, eyes closed. Hope. Verilane thought for a moment, feeling that darkness outside as if it were the Dark One's own, smothering the land and crawling in through windows, under doors. She rose, left Galad, and walked quickly away, carrying the medallion.
The Ammerlin seat is dead, Argander reported.
Blood and bloody ashes, Matt thought. Egwene. Not Egwene, too.
It hit him like a punch to the face. What's more, Argander continued, the Aes Sedai report that they have lost over half their numbers. The remaining ones claim, and this is a quote, that they couldn't channel enough of the One Power to lift a feather. They're out of the battle. Matt grunted. How many of the Sharon channelers did they take? He asked, bracing himself. All of them. Matt looked at Argander and frowned.
What?
All of the channelers, Argander said. All the ones that were fighting the Aes Sedai.
That's something, Matt said.
But Egwene. No. No thinking of that right now. She and her people had stopped the Sharon channelers. The Sharons and Trollocs fell back from the front lines to regroup. Matt took the opportunity to do the same. His forces, what remained of them, were strung out across the heights. He had joined together everyone he had left. The Borderlanders, the Dragonsworn, Loyal and the Ogier, Tam's troops, the Whitecloaks, soldiers of the Band of the Red Hand. They fought hard, but their foe greatly outnumbered them. It was bad enough when they just had the Sharons to contend with. But once the Trollocs had broken through the eastern edge of the heights, they were forced to defend themselves on two fronts. Over the past hour they had been pushed back more than 1,000 paces in a northerly direction, and their back ranks had almost reached the end of the plateau. This would be the last push, the end of the battle. With the Sharon channelers gone, Matt would not be wiped out immediately, but light. There were still so many bloody Trollocs left. Matt had danced this dance well. He knew he had. But there was only so much a man could do. Even Tuon's return might not be enough, if it came. Argander handled reports from the other areas of the battlefield. The man was wounded badly enough he could not fight, and there was no one with enough of the power left to spare for healing. He did his job well. Good man. Matt could have used him in the band. The Trollocs gathered for their push, again moving bodies out of the way, forming into fists with Murdral leading them. That would give Matt 5 or 10 minutes to get ready. Then it would come. Lan walked over, expression grim.
What would you have my men do, Cawthon?
Get ready to fight those Trollocs, Matt said. Has anyone checked with Mayenne lately? Now would be a wonderful time to get back a few of the ranks of men who have been healed.
I will check on it for you, Lan said, and then I will prepare my men.
Matt dug in his saddlebags as Lan withdrew. He pulled out Rand's banner, the one of the ancient Aes Sedai. He'd gathered it earlier, thinking perhaps it might have some use.
Somebody hoist this thing up. We're fighting in Rand's bloody name. Let's show the Shadow we're proud of it.
Danil took the banner, finding a spear to use as a pole. Matt took a deep breath. The way the Borderlanders spoke, they thought this would end in a glorious, heroic, suicidal charge. That was how Tom's songs always ended, the kinds of songs Matt had hoped to never find himself in. Faint hope that was now. Think. Think. In the distance, the Trolloc horns started blowing. Tuon had delayed. Was she going to come? He hoped secretly she would not. With the battle going so poorly, even the Shan Chan might not be enough. He needed an opening. Come on, look. Another gateway opened, and Arganda went to collect the messenger's report. Matt did not need to hear to realize the kind of news it was, as when Arganda returned, he was frowning. All right, Matt said, sighing. Give me your news.
The Queen of Andor is dead, Arganda said.
Bloody ashes. Not Elaine.
Matt felt a lurch inside.
Rand. I'm sorry.
Who leads there? Bashir?
Dead, Arganda said.
And his wife. They fell during attack against the Andoran pikemen. We've lost 6 Aiel clan chiefs as well. Nobody leads the Andorans or the Aiel at the riverbed. They're crumbling fast.
This is the end!
Demandred's augmented voice washed across Matt from the other end of the plateau.
Luz Theron has abandoned you. Cry out to him as you die. Let him feel your pain.
They had arrived at the last few moves in their game, and Demandred had played well. Matt looked over his army of exhausted troops, many of them wounded. There was no denying it. They were in a desperate situation.
Send for the Aes Sedai, Matt said. I don't care if they say they can't lift a feather. Maybe when it comes down to their lives, they'll find a little strength for a fireball here and there. Besides, their warders can still fight.
Arganda nodded. Nearby a gateway opened, and 2 beleaguered-looking Ashaman stumbled out. Naeve and Niald bore scorch marks on their skins, and Naeve's Aes Sedai was not with them.
Well? Matt asked the 3.
It is done, Niald said with a growl.
What of Tuon?
They found the spy, apparently, Naeve said. The Empress is waiting to return on your mark.
Matt breathed in, tasting the battlefield air, feeling the rhythm of the fighting he had set up. He didn't know if he could win, even with Tuon. Not with Elaine's army in disarray, not with the Aes Sedai weakened to the point of being unable to channel. Not without Egwene, her 2 rivers' stubbornness, her iron backbone. Not without a miracle.
Send for Naeve, Matt said.
He called for paper and a pen and scribbled a note, which he handed off to the Ashaman. He shoved aside the selfish desire to let Tuon fly to safety.
Bloody ashes. There was no safety, not anywhere.
Give this to the Empress, Naeve. Tell her these instructions must be followed exactly.
Then Matt turned to Niald.
I want you to go to Telmanis, he said. Have him move forward with the plan.
The 2 channelers left, off to deliver their messages.
Will it be enough? Arganda asked.
No, Matt said.
Then why?
Because I'll be a dark friend before I let this battle go without trying everything, Arganda.
Luz Theron,
Demandred boomed.
Come face me. I know you watch this battle. Join it. Fight.
I sure am growing tired of that man, Matt said.
Cawthon, look. Those Trollocs have regrouped, Arganda said. I think they are about to attack.
Then this is it.
Let's form up, Matt said. Where is Lan? Has he come back yet? I'd hate to do this without him.
Matt turned, scanning the lines for him, as Arganda shouted orders.
His attention was drawn back suddenly as Arganda grabbed his arm, pointing toward the Trollocs. Matt felt a chill as he saw in the light of bonfires a lone horseman on a black stallion charge into the right flank of the Trolloc horde, making for the eastern slope of the heights. Toward Demandred. Lan had gone to fight a war on his own. The Trollocs ripped at Ulver's arm in the night, reaching into the crack, trying to pry him free. Others dug at the sides and soil streamed in onto him, sticking to the tears on his cheeks and the blood flowing from his scratches. He couldn't stop shaking. He also couldn't make himself move. He trembled, terrified, as the beasts pried at him with filthy fingers, digging closer and closer. Loyal sat on a stump, resting before the battle picked up again. A charge. Yes, that would be a good way for this to end. Loyal felt sore all over. He had read a great deal about battle, and had been in fights before, so he had known what to expect. But knowing a thing and experiencing it were completely different. That was what a charge. Yes, that would be a good way for this to end. Loyal felt sore all over. He had read a great deal about battle, and had been in fights before, so he had known what to expect. But knowing a thing and experiencing it were completely different. That was why he'd left the steading in the first place. After more than a day of non-stop fighting, his limbs burned with a deep inner fatigue. When he raised his axe, the head felt so heavy he wondered why it didn't break the shaft. War. He could have lived his life without experiencing this. It was so much more than the frantic battle at the Two Rivers had been. There at least.